So today's topic is Tanoim. And I will, if you have on your screens, you can pick up the Makoros in the Shulchan Aruch. It'll certainly be helpful. Oh, Rabbi Stein, I noticed that you gave me two big packs of Rabbi Makoros for Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. I wasn't sure if any of those picked it up at Dollar Hand Row. I'm not sure historically. They just have it on the screen, so they don't.
They have a link.
They have links to everything. Hyperlink.
Everything's
hyperlinked, then you're okay. Okay, fine.
Kevin knows what that means.
I don't have to know what it means. I'm going to say the Shia. As long as we have the ability to look things up later on, because, fine. So,
we can hang it on the computer if you want to
cut
it up.
On top?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll see. I'm going to begin with the Rama in Simen Nun Sivov, which is the first Ramakum. What is this follows? Among discusses, there's a concept of making knosses for also b'shiduchin. That's a very important concept. You know, makabel kinyan, if one backed out, you have to pay. Look at choshen mishpat. All kinds of different things that were done in those times. Things change a little bit from time to time. The idea of tanoim was make sure that they don't back out. The question becomes, why isn't there an asmachta? So the Beis Shmuel and Simen Nun Sivchav says as follows. Why is it not a smacha? Because it's boshes. Kolkach kemod meaknas. In other words, it's approximately that amount. It's a boshes. You're paying for the embarrassment. I tell a story which is happened when I was young. There was they wrote the official tanoim with all the. That we usually don't write these days, we'll get to that in a minute. And if my memory serves, it was $100,000 knas on the part of either side if they backed out. And there was a yeshiva bacha who was engaged to a wealthy young lady, and she backed out. If my memory serves, the father of the girl wrote out a check for $100,000 to this kid, which is probably about $1 million now. I can't remember what it was. So he said that the boy was very jilted and upset, but 100,000 spoons of sugar make the medicine go down. So he made it a little bit easier for him. All right? That's my recollection. So this is an important concept. And as a matter of fact, the it goes so far as Yeshua's Yaakov's Kasha. If you have a knas, every kedusha should be no good, because you're doing kedusha only to avoid having to pay the knas. You should be matter the knas. Has to do with Hillel's Gerushin primarily. It's not going to go into get Musa question. Not for now. The interesting question is, why is it that if the boshes is not so great, he says, well, it's like over a shalom and metva. It's not considered to be a guzma. If you pay a little bit more than you're supposed to pay, that's not considered to be a significant problem. Fine. This is all in Simen Nun Sivov with the Beis Shmuel Yudal and the Pischa Tshuva there. But we're going a little bit further. I'd like to think, be tied to the text a little bit. As follows.
I mean, in terms of, let's say, costs that are incurred because of not knossos, but even without that language in the term, costs that are incurred because photographers have been engaged.
That's a very serious deterrent. If the engagement breaks up, they already pay. Who has to pay for those people? That's beyond the scope of this discussion, but it's a very good question. It really is a very good question.
Should we assume that it's split between the parties? Should that not be the assumption?
It's hard to know. Every case is a little bit different. It's really hard to know. Hard to say. Okay. So now we have the following. I'm just going in order. The children know that I printed the Mamakoma, but it's not the order we're going to present it. Just not to skip around too much. There was a Din in Shulchan Aruch Simen Nun Aleph Sif Aleph, which is a Gemara in both in Kedushin and in Ksubis. At this, Gemara says, "Kamash anos in lebincha, kamanos lebitcha, omde v'kitchu, hein adram v'nikne b'amira." Don't even need a Kenyan. Okay, this is a discussion of how when it's applied, the Rambam suggests it's only omde v'kitchu miyad. The no hefsek bidvarim acherim. And the Beis Shmuel says, it's not miyad, but they mentioned the Tanai, it also works. It's a discussion of these. The main point is Simon Nun Beis. Now it's interesting, Simon Nun Beis in Shulchan Aruch, you look it up, it says Simon Nun Beis Nun Gimel. This particular edition, it breaks it up into Nun Beis and Nun Gimel, two Simonim. If you look at some of the other Shulchan Aruch, it's only one big Simon, but it starts with Siv Dalet. Change the sifim on me because there's no see in my Shulchan Aruch Nun Beis and Gimel are printed together. Nun Beis has only one sif, so what used to be Nun Beis and Gimel, just for your information, you look it up, Nun Beis and Gimel sif dal is now Nun Gimel sif Gimel in this print, so I can't tell you which print you have. Okay, we're going to read the middle of the Ramah about the Takanas of Rabbeinu Tam. Interesting. O Tikkun Rabbeinu Tam, Mechaf Mitzorfas, Sh'af M'Kfarnosan Ha'av Nedunya, Emeso Isho Ish, Toch Shona Rishona, V'lo Zera Kayama, Chozer Akol, La'av Al-Yoshe Ha'meis. And something, you have half the second, you have Echen Aminik Pashit, Rudinas Elu, Sh'noagin, V'zek Etakonas Kehilo Shum. What does Shum stand for? Spira Vermeiser Magensa. Okay? Spira Vermeiser Magensa. Okay? So, this is an important Nakuda. What does all this mean? Again, the Siv Katans are a little out of whack over here. The Berhetev is the Siv Katan Tezayan, the Fizer, I feel lo nichta betnoi mashenogu. That's what's written in every Tanah. To this day, go to any Hasidic wedding where they don't eviscerate the Tanah as Rav Moshe did. Have a kilu and a nichta. The chalkas machalk exceso. Shuvah makes a distinction between Ashkenaz and Poland. Ashkenaz is not automatic, and the Poland is automatic. Takanashim. Now, what in the world is either iktat takanashim? What do the words mean? It's not completely clear what the words mean. The Rebbe Shmuel says, as I just mentioned to you before, even doesn't say Yama Katana Shum, it's automatic. It's automatic. What is Takana Shum? What in the world is it? Anybody know? No one knows. Not surprising. I mean, how are you supposed to know? No one knows what Takana Shum is. So either, we just read in the Ramah, either means absent. Is a permanent absence. It's called death. If the as we mentioned in the Ramah, if the person dies within the year, so Rabbi Natam is Mataka. As a matter of fact, people think Rabbi Natam is called death week's parsha. Yaakov ish tam yoshe v'holim. That's certainly one reason. But also because it is takana, Chazal teaches us that a person who gives so much money for the dunya for his daughter, so his daughter can get married, so the son-in-law now has the money, then the daughter dies. So Chazal says, "V'tam larik kochachem." You put all your work, you spent all your life saving enough money for a dowry for your daughter. You give the dowry to the daughter dies, the son-in-law keeps all the money, you have no daughter, you have no money. V'tam larik kochachem. So to avoid that problem, I mean, the time that the money goes back fully the first year, some say extended the second half the second year, Ezra Moss said, very nice. That's either. What's k'tat? What is k'tat? I brought a sefer called Nachla Shiva. Nachla Shiva is the sefer on shtaros. You want to write a shtar, you're looking at the sefer Nachla Shiva. Nachla Shiva has this phrase. It's called Tanoim, Simen Tes. It's called Tanoim. There's Tanoim Rishonim and there's Tanoim Achronim. Tanoim Rishonim was primarily to make sure they don't back out. That was done at the time of the engagement. Tanoim Achronim was done. Look, we have at the time of the wedding. Okay, This is Tanoim Achronim. That's what we have in our Tanoim. You may recognize from the various weddings you've been to. Okay, fine. Here's the thing of Ketan. I'm reading verbatim from Nachal Shiva. Tim Chas v'Sholom, Sheyasa Kemar Plonia Analas V'Gosim Ars Plonis, Ezo Dvorim, She'eina Yechol Lisbo, U'Tzricha Lebezin. Means that I got a... Os Techev U'Miyad, Yitan Lo Asor Zuhuvim L'Pizim B'Zonos. So they give her 10 Zuhuvim to support her. What happened until now? Well, until the Ketat, obviously he was supporting her. Once he had a Ketat, so then he stopped supporting her. She's out of the house. How do I know? Achash in Espashu, Tavs and Mars Plon is the base Baila. If they succeed. I think it's just a pie in the sky. Let's go on. Let's give 10 Zuhuvim every month as long as they're separated. This is Takonat Shum, Machos Ketat. Okay? Fine. And Idur is the whole story about half of the first year, second year. This is a very important line I read to you from the Nachla Shiva, Simon Tess. It's called the Tanoim Acharonim. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, said that nowadays, Tanoim Acharonim, which is written just before the Chuppah, so it's not a question of backing out, that's all taken away. And the original Tanoim, which I'll read you from Simon Ches, which is Tanoim Rishonim, which they still have in certain Chassidic weddings, even though they start at an hour before the wedding, it doesn't really make too much sense. It says that what happens. Listen carefully. Im chas v'shalom, yavim and atzad atnoim, they won't get married. Yitain tzad ha'ovel, tzad ha'makayim, a certain amount of money, and if someone is in error of kablam, in case the chosn or the father won't pay, someone else will pay, etc., etc., etc. And in the typical Chassidish Tanoim, this has it. Ayin Kuf, or of Kablam, but most people don't know what the words Ayin Kuf mean. So I've seen people fill them out, they put the Mechutin's name there a second time. I once heard a great Rav Choshev Rosh Hashiva reading the Tanoim of this, Yamak Etakonos, he says Shin Vav Mem, he didn't know how to pronounce it. There was a whole pause. I don't know, Sholem Meshiv, I didn't know what to do with it. Because Rav Moshe said, forget about all this. All our Tanoim say absolutely nothing. So nothing. They're going to get married and they're going to get hard for each other and live their place. They Torah. So Rav Moshe eviscerated the Torah. There's nothing left in our Tanoim. But the original Tanoim was if either party backs out, you pay the money. That's the case I spoke about before. Give them $100,000. They give you, tell you how much over here. Estrim Reichisch Thaler, and I gave a certain amount of money, which was significant in Poland in the 17th century when the Nachla Shiva was written, and things of this nature. And once again, that's in the original Tanoim Rishonim as well. So that's a very important line which we spoke about. Why is all this relevant? Because I believe that the Nachla Shiva, Simen Ches, and Tes, both of which have the Tanoim Rishonim and Achronim, are a perfect precedent for what I want to discuss with you today, which is the prenuptial agreement, which has become a matter of some controversy in the last number of years. So I'll give you a little history over here. It's a kind of a personal history, which will enable you to remember the halachic history. The personal history is that when I became a rav in a shul, it's now... 46 years, the Ayin Hara, I made a certain resolution that I don't want to have any agunas in my shul. Because you know, at the time already, the agunas problem was already starting to blow up in earnest for a simple reason. Divorces became more common, unfortunately, and the Rabbanim had no say, and it was terrible. Not the agunas of the World Trade Center that Nebuchadnezzar had to deal with later on. This is the new kind, they call the modern day aguna. Husband is alive and well. We know he just refuses to give a get when he should be giving a get. I want to emphasize when he should be giving a get. Because the woman who says, I'm an aguna, doesn't mean she's really an aguna. She just says she's an aguna. You have to be careful with the abuse of the term. It means she's entitled to a get up here, halacha, and she's not receiving one. That is arguably, we call it today, Amara de Aguna. So I lived a charmed life for quite a number of years. There were a couple of divorces early on, but they went to court. They didn't bother me. No one ever complained to come to me. No woman ever came to me to complain she didn't have Aguna. But, you know, all good things run out. So some years later, I ran into a problem in my shul. Nice couple. He's nice. She's nice. But they weren't so getting us along. I was helping to counsel them. Finally, after maybe at one time he was physical, etc. She said she wants again. And I knew the story. So I said, you know, to the fellow, nice guy, you know, you should give her again. No. If she won't do this, this, or this, she'll be an aguna. Oh, no. For 15 years, I was hoping to avoid this throughout my rabbinical career, but the jig was up, and I said, you really have to give her again. It's very important to give her again now. He was not happy with what I said. He did what most balabatim do. Go to a different rabbi. He went to a different rabbi, the biggest shul in the community, and said, told him his whole story. And this fellow's a very honest fellow. Honest fellow. He told the whole truth. And the rabbi said, yeah, she give her what I forget. Wasn't happy. Went to a third rabbi. And the third rabbi told him the same thing. So after a while, she said, nothing's happening. So we called him up, wrote him a letter. You're not welcome in our three shuls until you give your wife again. The three rabbis agreed. He wasn't official Bezdin, but he spoke. All three agreed based on what he said. Not what she said, but he said. So, this was right after Sukkot 1989. Okay, so now we're talking about how many years ago? 30 years ago?
30.
On the dot. Okay. So this went on and on and on. The Balabatim came to complain to me. There are two sides to every story. I said, you're right. There are two sides to every story. But you have to come down. You have to have a psak. Kitzer. We were learning Gittin that year in the yeshiva. And Pesach has arrived. There was still no resolution from this. After Sukkot, we told him, 6 months passed. Nothing's happening. So I told the Talmidim of my shir, listen, after Pesach, we're still, we have to do something about this problem. We have to do something. We have to do some research. Maybe we can do something about it. We're going to learn that part of Gittin. The end of the last half of Gittin is about getting Musa. P.S. We start learning. Kodesh Baruch Hu rewards right away. Right after Pesach, we start learning. Rosh Chodesh Iyar. A week after Pesach, the judge gave a decision. A well-coached judge. The judge said, I'm dividing your assets 50-50. If you give your wife a get within the next 10 days, you get 55%. Wow. Not to penalize him for not giving a get, to reward him for giving a get. I checked with my experts. They said, this is a kosher get. He gave the get. That was on a Thursday. Shabbos, he walks into shul. I told the gabbai, you have to give him shlishi. So the gabbai says, for 6 months, he couldn't out. I said, yeah. If he didn't give a get, he shouldn't come in. Now he gave the get, he deserves shlishi. Shlishi. I shook his hand. He was a little hesitant to shake my hand after, but he remarried, she remarried. There's a parsha of divorce for a reason. They're both sorry. So they both were happily married subsequently. Meanwhile, I was already starting to, you know, I wasn't going to stop right there. I was already on to a particular suggestion, which I was seen printed in Moriah, Tofshin Iyar, also Iyar, Tofshin Memches, an article by a rabbi who I'd never heard of before, and Rabbi Tzvi Gartner. Very choshev b'talmud chacham, an American who lives in Ramot. He now is involved in Rabbi Usher Weiss's Bezdin and Rabbi Nevinsel's Bezdin, and even in our Bezdin. He spoke at our Gittin conference just last year. And he quoted something from Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg. I'm not sure he even knew that name at the time. So I'm showing Zalman's son-in-law. Now he's understand one of the Gedolei Hador. This is now going back 30 years. He was then also from the Gedolei Hador, but not everyone knew that much at the time. He has a certain kind of a suggestion. So I called him up. So I remember Meir Goldberg, who learned the Becharusa, because he was very friendly with his father and Shlomo Zalman, the whole story. He said, was it ever used? I don't know. Chaim is a theoretician. He does not implement his suggestions. Turned out it was never used. And we corresponded. Finally, I really have to go to Eretz Yisrael to get this thing done. So that's following January 91. It was the Gulf War time. I went to Eretz Yisrael to meet Rav Zalman Nechemiah. Yeah. You want to make a ticket? If you really want to do this, you got to speak to somebody else. You can't just do it based on what I said. What he said was a little bit different. The difference is I don't have time to go into right now at this moment. Who should I go to? Go to Rabbi Tzimba List in Tel Aviv. They knew each other from Chevron Yeshiva. They were both, you know, Mitzuyonim, Shabbat Mitzuyonim, Chevron Yeshiva. And he's such a great Dayan of Tzimba List. The one of Yoshev needed a Dayan, a retired Dayan, to deal with the most thorny case in the whole land, the Punovich case. He asked Rabbi Tzimba List to do it, which has taken many Bizyonis ever since. But, you know, that's the job of a good Dayan. Indicating he was the number one Dayan of Yoshev's estimation. He said, I'm not happy with Rav Zalman Nechemiah. Did turn it around. When he turned it around, it turned out to be just about what we have over here in Nachla Shiva. Which means that when they separate, he obligates himself to give X dollars a day. Period. This way, it's a great precedent. Right? Let's have Nachla Shiva. He didn't realize it at the time. And it's not again Ma'usa, because all you're paying is Mizonis. You're not paying a Knas. Now, if you have to give a Knas, the Ramah writes in Siman Kuf Lamed Daled that if you a knas machmas atzmo is kosher b'di'evav not lechatchila, the Pesachet Shiva goes to Mishkanes Yaakov, who's not even so happy even b'di'evav. But the Ramah remains the Ramah. Fine. So I was afraid that Rav Zalman Nechemiah wouldn't like his one either, and we'd be really in trouble. So I came back with a little bit of trepidation. I had spent already 8 months working on this. Good, we'll do it his way, on the spot. Even though he wrote an article for Fakir 2.5 years early, it was written in his name. Good. I went back to America, had to get all the lawyers to make it legal and this and this and this and this. Took me a whole year. Went back a year later, peacetime, to the Holy Land, and back and forth to the same to Rabbanim. Got a text. They signed it. I went to Rabbi Avadja. He signed it. Came back to America to Rabbi Schwartz and Rabbi Libes Zal. Was one of the great Rabbonim of the Igud Rabbonim. It was a big Abedin area in Europe already. He signed it. We went to work. We're ready to go. Fine. I had attempted to get some of my other acquaintances in the rabbinical world of what we'll call the so-called Haredi segment in this country, and I went to two very chashuv rabbanim. They both told me it's fine. I guess I can reveal their names. I went first to they both have the same name. They're both Rabbi Cohen, and they're both from Brooklyn. Rabbi David Cohen and Rabbi Feivel Cohen. Rabbi David Cohen said it's a great idea. I think recently he said it publicly, and so I don't have to, that's why I don't have to worry about indulging his name. But it's not going to happen in my part of the world. I said, what? That was already after a bloodbath in Chaim Berlin, for those who know the history. Then went through a Feivel Cohen, him I had no problem. I knew he was going to say it's okay, because he wrote a whole sefer called Midor Lidor about inheritance, that there's no Asmachta problem, so I knew he was going to say it was okay, which he did. And as a matter of fact, it's a bit of a sequel. After before we came with the text, and the text had really two fundamental parts to it. Number one, that if they has a problem in the marriage and they have to break up, they'll go to a bezdin, not the secular court. And number two is an obligation of, it was then $100 a day for support. Where did the number come from? That's what it costs to live. And no, that's what it costs them. Those $100 a day, just for the woman herself, it's for rent, for food, for clothes, for maybe for a car, for insurance. Whatever, health insurance, basic needs that everybody needs to live on. And then it was $36,000 a year. Right, $100 a day. At one point in time, that wasn't enough. So it's 150. It's been 150 for a long time. That's where we come back to where that number fits in soon. Anyway, so there were a number of objections raised. The single most significant halachic objection was the problem of asmachta. That's why I mentioned earlier about asmachta, why it comes to tzurim, it's not considered an asmachta. Why not? Well, it's not an exaggerated sum. The boshes cost that much, so you're allowed to agree to give whatever amount you give for the tzurim. It's not an exaggeration. boshes, the tamei boshes is it's an embarrassment. You know, it's hard to quantify. Fine. However, not everyone agrees to that. So we try to take a number of other ways to avoid it from being an asmachta. It says in the Gemara, Masechta Nedarim, and it's quoted Lalochan Shulchan Ochan and Choshen Mishpat. It's even a little bit in Eben Ezra too, that if you agree to a particular condition in the following fashion, with a kinyan me'achshav v'bezdin choshuv, it's not an asmachta. So we wrote into our document, he agrees, he admits, he acknowledges, he's done this, with a kinyan me'achshav and a bezdin choshuv. Do you have to actually do it? No. Because hodos ba'al k'meidim dami, you acknowledge you did it, the kinyan me'achshav, v'bezdin choshuv, that overcomes asmachta, aside from the fact it's not an exaggeration, which is another reason we said so earlier, it should overcome a smachta problem. Fine. Other rabbanim are not so sure that it really is an asmachta. So my response to that, it can't be an asmachta because it's takana shum. Takana shum is evidence that's not an asmachta. The response to that was, no, takana shum is hefker bez and hefker. They have that ability. We don't have that ability anymore. We don't have an organized kill anymore. My response to that was, that may be true in Poland, because in Poland it's sort of automatic. But in Ashkenaz, where it's not effective unless you write it, it's obviously the best is not imposing it, there should be a proof that it's not a problem of asmachta. Okay, that was the main original problem. But there's one other problem with this preda, also significant, that the whole point of the prenup is as follows. One of the other rabbanim said, there's no need for any new prenups. Just translate the ksuba into English. Have it notarized and legalized. Yeah, no problem. That's not correct. Why is it not correct? Because what happens if the woman leaves the house or the man leaves the house? They're no longer living together. Does he still have an obligation to support her or not? Depends. Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Ayin, Sifyut Beis, it depends whose fault the breakup is. If it's his fault, he has to pay. If it's her fault, she doesn't have to pay. He doesn't have to pay. The problem becomes determining fault. That's why in America, everything's no fault. No fault, car, no, everything's no fault. Because to determine fault is forever. There's no fault divorce, no fault car insurance, everything's no fault. But determining fault is a very difficult enterprise. And she can turn white till she gets a judgment that it's his fault and she's entitled to the money. So all we did was plug up that hole. That's all we did. We plug up the hole and we said that the man obligates himself to pay, you know, the regular mezonos, but if they're separated, so in lieu of that obligation, he agrees to pay her now $150 per day, period. That's all. So this is going to work to plug up that hole, even if in fact it is her fault, he's obligated anyway. Of course, there's a problem with that. So she can live the life of Raleigh forever. Just no, because if he comes to Bezdin and he says I'm here to discuss the issue, and she refuses to come to Bezdin, or she refuses to abide by the decision or the recommendation of the Bezdin, then he's off the hook. This way, this case has to come to Bezdin. It's enforceable in American court of law, so it makes it very likely that the get will be given expeditiously if the Bezdin thinks it's appropriate. Because if he doesn't give the get, it costs $150 a day to the woman he hates, and he doesn't want to do that. It doesn't work if he's too rich, because then he left the spider. So that's like a penny a day, he doesn't care. Billionaire, multi-millionaire. It doesn't work if he's too poor. Then he'll say, I'm judgment-proof, I have no money, so can't take anything from me. So in those two extremes, it doesn't work. But it's like a bell curve. You know, most people are not in the very, very rich, not the very, very poor. No, in this case, it has been proven to be very effective. There's one problem. What's the problem? You want to say that I'm required to give her this $150 a day from mezonos? Okay, no problem. I'll give it to her. But the Gemara tells us that there's a quid pro quo. The quid pro quo is masa yodeho. Masa yodeho means what her earnings. So I'm happy to give her $150 a day, $55,000 a year. She should give me her earnings. In today's world, in many, if not most cases, she earns more than $55,000 a year. So this whole thing loses all of its clout. It's worthless. So there is another phrase which has to be inserted. That the husband waives the right to his wife's earnings for the period of time that this obligation is in effect. The problem with that is, it's again a very serious halakhic problem, when does that waiving have to take place? The Moses in Ksuvos Pei Gimel, that he's allowed to, he has the ability to waive his rights to certain things. The Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch is, Din Dvarim Ene Ben Chasayach of a Perasein of a Peres Perasein at Olam. But the Gemara in Ksuvos says that it has to be done Ben Eris and the Nesuin. If you do it before the Eris, then it's too early. After the Nesuin, it's too late. So when is Ben Eris and the Nesuin? So to jump to what really should be the next week's topic, when exactly is Nisuin? Kiddushin, we all know, the first mission of Kiddushin, Kesar Shtar Biyam. What's Nisuin is a big problem. It's not exactly clear what Nisuin is. We don't know what is it? What is Nisuin? Well, we should talk about that mostly next week. But I'll tell you already now that we understand Nisuin to be a chuppah, right? Or yichud. Those are the two main things, chuppah and yichud. The problem is, if he gives her a ring under the chuppah, there are some poskim who say there is no time between the erusin and the nisuin. The second he gives her the ring, which is the erusin, she's already in the suah, she's under the chuppah with him. So I don't think that's correct lahalacha. I'll give you one example. My father, the Chron Levracha, remarried. So his wife had two daughters in Bnei Brak, and she wanted legitimately that her assets should go to her children. So my father was given a cue card, which is authored by Rav Distin Karelitz in his Bezdin, to say those words. When did he say the words? After he gave her the ring, before they proceeded with the ksuba and the sheva brachas. But he did it under the chuppah. From Distin Karelitz, under the clear assumption that even though they're under the chuppah, it's not in the suya because they don't want to be in the suya yet. If a boy and a girl go under a canopy, you won't say chuppah kona, according to Rav Huna, because they're under a canopy. You have to have kavana that the chuppah should achieve the level of Nisuin, which they don't have until after, in my opinion, maybe until next week a little bit more, they're not Nisuin until they finish the last of the Sheva Brachos. The Sameh Chos and the Makala, they want to be Nisuin, because otherwise Kala would Brachos through the Baal Kanida, they wouldn't want until that time. So therefore, there is a Bein Eretz Nisuin. You don't like that. I'm talking about Usher Weiss doesn't like that. So he says, you got to give her the ring, not under the Chuppah, and then say Din Dvarim, and then walk under the Chuppah. I don't think that's required, but if you, fine. The problem with the prenup is, well, you gotta do that. I told Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein that Sal was given a prenup. He said, okay, it's fine. You gotta do it under the chuppah. Because, you know, Shtaka going, he said the waving won't work earlier than that. So our text includes the following line. And I shall be deemed to have repeated this waiver at the time of the marriage. I, how can you admit to something which hasn't happened yet? You admit to something which hasn't happened yet. So the Sma writes in Siman Lama and Choshen Mishpat, you can't do such a thing. In addition, I can't go into the details right now. If you look in Hilchos Ksubas later on, there are some poskim who say it's in Avodas HaGashuni, Chavas Yor, it's in Chuvas Goni Basroi, where you can eat, since we have Shidduchim are so strong, once it's a Shidduch, engagement is made, it's the equivalent of Erisin for the purposes of being able to have Mechila from that point on, for a number of other reasons. But the main reason why I think it's not really a problem is because Me'ikir Adin, the man is not entitled to these earnings in the first place. Because even though there's a Machlokas in the Sugyas and Gemara, and Machlokas in the Gemara, Machlokas in the Paskim, what's called Hadofa Adei Adchak. That means she's, if you look at the Mishnah Ksubas, she's required to knit a certain amount per week. And she does a little bit more, she's very quick. That's a question, does that go to her or to go to him? But most posts can assume that's only true when she's working in the house. She's required to work in the house, that's what the halacha demands of her. But to work outside the house, there's no such requirement. You can't demand of your wife to work outside the home. You know, she shouldn't really be working out of the home. We live in a new world, okay? Remember Rabbi Danziger Shlita, man is now well into his 90s, he was living in Riverdale. His wife used to work to make a living, and I think she worked in City College, as a secretary. He said to me once, she really shouldn't leave the house. I mean, it's not right that she's out in the What can I do? We can't. My broyer's salary won't support our family. A lot of children, Baruch Hashem. So it's, you can't say help you. Then your wife is required to work outside the house, and therefore her earnings belong to her. That's what I really think. But again, that's how this problem is overcome as well.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean to say that the augmented field of earnest and the Mativa of the Nicaea Dime, if it's necessary, is taking effect that when they sign the prenup or at the commencement of the marriage, or does that change and only kick in if there will be a recalcitrant?
The Chiv itself will only happen in real life if the conditions apply. The conditions are they're no longer living together. And 99% of the prenups that are signed, we hope we'd like to have 99.9, it's rats in the drawer, like any good insurance policy. Rats in the drawer, in the best, and no one ever, nothing ever happens. He's mochel only during the time that the schiv is in effect. In most cases, it's never in effect. So then, fine. This is what, fine. Good. So, done. So, when I did this, I was assisted by a group which is now defunct, but it has two tremendous, tremendous credits to its name. Helped with the prenup, and they helped with the reorganization of the Bezdin of America. That's something called the Orthodox Caucus. As Americans say, Zichron Levracha, that they did two good things. They did other things also, but two good things. And the people who helped me said, you know, why don't you go to the top, and see if they'll be masking. I was never into top. But they said, they put a little pressure on me to go to Shlomo Zalman Rav Yosef. This is right in 1993. The year after we already signed it, and it's already out in the, it's out in the street. Shlomo Zalman said, Lech the Dayanim. That's okay. And he didn't want to. Rav Yosef said, go to my loyal trust aide, Rabbi Morgenstern, and he'll tell you what I think about this. And he had four objections. One, which is already printed in his name by Rabbi Gartner in that same article, Yer Tovshin Hemches, the chassan is going to sign it without knowing what he's signing. To which we don't understand. So what? If you look in Samach Vav and in Hilchos Ksubas, that doesn't matter. You ever sign in the lease? Do you ever read all the small print? I didn't read it. I didn't understand it. There's no such luck. You sign it, it's binding. Rabbi Gartner responded in that article, but in America they will know because they have lawyers involved. I can tell you very well they know how much they know. They don't want to sign it because they know. Someone said, just put it in Aramaic. It'd be no problem. Mm-hmm. No one did. Anyway, that was one objection. The second objection was he thought it was going to go to court as a result of this, which is exactly the opposite. This keeps it out of court. The third, I don't understand to this day, he's going to give a get when he doesn't really want to give it. Well, okay, that's what the Nachas Shimon is all about, if you ask me. Rabbi Usher Weiss, who gave us a beautiful letter of Askama, claimed that the Nachas Shimon is just that she shouldn't starve to death, but nothing to do with what we're discussing. I disagree with him. I mean, it doesn't matter that much because the technicalities are overcome whichever way. And the fourth reason was the Chashash HaSmachta. That's the serious Chashash HaSmachta. This is 1993. Okay.
What was the objection before the third objection?
Third, he's going to give a get when otherwise, if not for the prenup, he wouldn't want to give the get. Uh-huh. So what? Okay. Fast forward 2 years later, 1995. There's a shidduch, an unlikely shidduch, between a girl from the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale, Rabbi Avi Weiss, and a boy from the yeshiva of Far Rockaway. Under Rabbi Peer. Rabbi Peer was the one who had the original prenup of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. She just is going to go to a Bezdin, which is a very good idea. And you should name the Bezdin, so you shouldn't fight about it later on. They're now trying to do that now in Brooklyn, a new kind of prenup that's going to name the Bezdin, which is certainly a very good step, because otherwise they fight, they go to the court, the witch Bezdin, corrupt Bezdin, Zabla Bezdin. It's all this a disaster. But his assistant then was Rabbi Kaufman, who's presently Rosh Yeshiva Waterbury. And he was the Masada Kedushin in his wedding. He's a son-in-law of Rabbi Feivel Cohen. So he comes to me, Rabbi Weiss said, he's not letting the girl go to the chuppah without a prenup. What do I do? He calls me up. I said, it's true, your shver had certain, Rabbi Yosh had certain objections. I will write to your father-in-law, tell him what the objections are, and see what he says. So I wrote him a letter. I faxed it to him. Remember those things called faxes? I faxed him, so I asked to have the original. with the four objections I just mentioned earlier, because five accords are tremendous of a Yoshev Chazon. Tremendous. There's no bigger of a Yoshev Chazon in America than Rabbi Five Accords, to my knowledge. But he also wrote this Hefer B'Torah L'Dor, and told me earlier, it's I'm not really much of a problem. So he told his son-in-law, you can have the prenup, it's okay. That happened in that particular year. Fine. So we're going on and on. I believe it was in 2008 that we decided that it's time to, you know, refresh it and rewrite it in a better form, and we did. And that was assisted by Rabbi Gardner. This time it was written in Hebrew. Now, the original was in Hebrew also, but just a very short, they had the meat of it. And it was just extended with certain options, because there was many women who didn't want to sign it because they want to go to court. We can't allow going to court. The question was, can we ask the Beis Din to take into account what we call equitable distribution, which is the law of the state of New York, for example. May you or may you not. So Mazav Nechem wrote something in Yeshua, and you're allowed to write down the Beis Din should follow New York state law. Others start screaming, Gevalt, it's in Yisrael Kos, it's terrible, there's a Rajba. I have a long piece of my saber why the Rajba never said that, why it's perfectly permissible. But just to play it safe, we don't write down New York State. Equal distribution based on a uniform commercial code, which is not the law in any of the 50 states. It's just an approximation. Fine, that's an option. They can either opt in or opt out of that option. Fine. So we wrote all this up, and it was out. Nehemiah signed it, and Rabbi Shalwai signed it. The others, whatever. We got those signatures on this updated version 2008. Everything's fine and dandy. It's being very, very helpful. Came along a particular Avreich who had his own proposal. But in order to have his own proposal, he had to knock down our proposal. So he started making a tumult about it. The tumult was not an honest tumult. He identified this particular prenup. And he wrote a big pasquil, and he said, don't think it's a Haredi thing. He had a thing from all the, what he called the Datilu Mirabonim, who came out against it. Huh? He cut and pasted an objection that he had in 1986, before I think it was even created, to some other prenup that was suggested by somebody or other, and he gave an impression that they were writing against what we had written. What can I tell you? I don't need to say more than that. Bekitzer, in Eretz Yisrael, there were different prenups, and those are not the same as ours, and they really have certain parts which I would not agree to. And he twisted it, and those were against that or against this as well. Until Rav Nevinsal, memory serves, said, no, this is different than those. This is a problem, and the one that we have is not a problem. The kids are, so he got stuck, so he's going to Rabbi Sternbuch. Oh, Rabbi Sternbuch from the Barat Eda Charedis, and he shows him what we have. Rabbi Sternbuch writes a tshuva opposed to it. What's the first line of the tshuva? The first line, the very first line. The first line of the tshuva says, oh, a knas, a fine. Oh no, that's no good. Either a mos has in your Ebenezer, kuflam and dalad, Knas Machmas Asa is good, but the Evid, that may be only if it's done just before the get is given, when they already have a fight. If it's done before the marriage, it may not be good. And even in the Ramos case, the Mishkan Shagam said it's no good, and therefore it's a very bad thing, and he signs his name. The problem is that the first line is incorrect. And the first line is incorrect, the whole Shuma is incorrect. So I decided, Adam Gadol, we're going to go to him and explain to him that the first line is not correct. It's not a knas at all. It's just a mizonus. Mizonus in the society that we are serving. But before I went to them, I decided to do my homework. Now, till then, we were just approximating based on what we thought. So someone from my community went and did statistics in the zip codes which we are discussing. It does not include some of the neighborhoods that... doesn't include Monroe or, you know, the Hasidic part of Williamsburg, where people have no money. It included Riverdale, the Upper West Side, Teaneck, Woodmere, Scarsdale. They're communities that the Abbezin serves primarily. And going through the various metrics, it came out that the $150 a day is certainly in the ballpark. We've been under pressure to raise it. And the West Side says, you can't live that way. Just what's the rent in the West Side? Just the rent is bankrupts you. And you know what it costs? Just a one-bedroom apartment in the West Side. What does it cost per month now? One-bedroom apartment in the West Side.
$3,000.
How much? $3,000. It's already $36,000 before you start. So you have to eat. You have to have clothes. That's not shaykh. Okay? So it's a little bit less than Washington Heights, but not that much less. So it's the numbers are not inflated. Anyway. So we... love this. Rav Sturmach's Mama Lashon is English. English. He's from London. He was the London Eloi, as is mine. They told me you can't talk to him in English, can't talk to him in Hebrew, can't talk to him in Yiddish. Okay, I figured talk to him in Yiddish. Okay. So we did. And we explained to him it's not a class. We gave him a file of numbers. He said to us, okay, I hear what you're saying. But what happens if this individual is in a lower level? This is the average. He's a lower level. He doesn't make as much as the average person living in Riverdale or the West Side. And there are many people like that, below average. So we said, if he doesn't make that much money, now you have to understand, it says in Hilchos Ksubis, the Gemara Ksubis, V'hi bu'ulas bal, we read it a couple of weeks ago in the Chumash, Olimo v'ni oredes imo. So he's obligated to the higher of the two. The higher of which two? What his standard of living or her family's standard of living. But if this $150 a day is more than either of those standards of living, the Bezin can say, sorry, you can't get that much. You have to get less. The Bezin's empowered to do that. She can't get like a nickel without Bezin. So that's included. Okay, you heard that too. Then he said, well, what will happen if he doesn't have the money? That's a legitimate question. He doesn't have the money. If he has absolutely no money, there's nothing to talk about. You go to court, they'll say, I'm judgment proof. But most people have some money, just doesn't have enough money, doesn't want to pay. So we have a general principle, if a person doesn't have enough money, you can't take his shirt, you can't take his chair. It's called a misadre on the balchov. You only have to pay if, beyond what your basic necessities are. So what will happen, these kinds of cases, they'll say, I'm potter because misadre on the balchov. So Rabbi Gartner responded to Rav Sturmach Shlita and said, I'm sorry, in this case it doesn't apply. Why not? It only applies to a chov where there's no way out but paying the chov. You gotta pay it. So I can't pay it, so I'm not required to sell my chairs and my tables and my house. Fine. Here, argued Rabbi Gartner to Rav Sturmach, there's a very simple way for him to pay up the debt. What's that? Give her a get. Give her a get, and then the obligation ceases to exist. He heard. He shook his head a little bit, Didn't say one way or the other, but it sounds like a very compelling argument to me. And therefore, we left fairly satisfied that we had made our points. And we left. So Rabbi Gartner dutifully wrote up a beautiful protocol in Hebrew of what happened during that meeting. I wouldn't ask the Godel Ador to sign such a protocol because that would be a little bit chutzpah on my part. But since his sons were there and they were listening in, I said maybe they would sign it. They didn't sign it either. So you have to take the word of Rabbi Gartner and myself. I had a son-in-law there. I had a grandson there. This is what happened in real life. Notwithstanding what I just told you, Rabbi Sturman printed his next sefer, Chelek Zayin, the Tshuva is in there as it was originally printed. That I don't understand. I don't want to say anything more than that. The kids and immigrants, so despite all these tumults now in recent months or years have started with that Tshuva, but it's a completely incorrect tshuva, but b'chilos kvodo, because the first line is incorrect. You want them at another tshuva against us, okay. But we explained it. The Teretz says, I don't think he believes that amount of money, he was incredulous. Despite what we showed him, incredulous. He couldn't believe that these numbers are real. How can it be? Too high. Okay, so I'm sure in Bate Ungarin, the Badatz and then Meir Shorim is located, it's too high. In Har Nof, it's a little too high, but not crazy high. As a matter of fact, when we were asked to make such a document for Talmidei Eretz Yisrael. I asked around, what does it cost to live in Hanov, from Bet Shemesh, you know, the American colonies? And we decided, based on our, you know, it's hard to pinpoint, we cut it in half. In the Israeli version, it says $75 a day to $150. I don't know if you live on less than Ramat Bet Shemesh or in Harnof. It costs money to live there too. So, again, we're going forward with the assumption that it's 100% correct document, notwithstanding the protestations. Now, I have a chap. Rabbi Yashiv, I'm sure they came to him to try to ask for it. There's no question about it. I mean, he never signed anything against the Kriyat. Never. But the question becomes, why not? Even there's an attorney named Dov Frimu who said, you know why Rabbi Yashiv was against it? Asmachta. He discovered in Kovitz Chuvus that Rabbi Yashiv holds as Asmachta. And Rabbi Yashiv, in my opinion, is completely correct according to the Rambam. It's an Asmachta. The Rambam, I believe it's true. It says Meferish, it's not Asmachta. The Rambam himself talks about a Kenyan, a Me'achshav, is overcoming Asmachta, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, both in Evanez and in Choshen Mishpah. Rabbi Yashiv says that's only for what we call Hakno'a, that when you're transferring ownership of something, but not what we call his Schaivus, not when you are obligating yourself to something. Obligations cannot be overcome according to the Rambam, even with a Kenyan Me'achshav Bebez and Choshen. It won't work. I happen to think he's 100% right. However, Lanias Daiti, the Mechaber is against it. The Mechaber is in Choshen Mishpat, Tanya Mara Mekomashitz, Simen, Kuf, Lamed, Aleph, Sif Yud. Look at the Beis Yosef in the Bedek Abayis. It's a little bit of a complicated story. As an Orev Al Tanai, an Orev is a Schaivus. Why isn't every Orev in Asmachta? You don't pay to pay. You hope the guy's going to pay the money himself. You're only a guarantor. So the Gemara says, he has hanemanas, he trusts me, but what if it's on a condition? It should be an asmachta. So if you look carefully in the fine print, the assumption there is of the mechaber, I do concede, maybe based on an incorrect reading of the Torah, it's a balita, a long story, not for now, but the bottom line of the mechaber is that it's not considered to be an asmachta, not only for kaknov, but also for eschaivus. That's my read. The Rav Yoshev's psak is completely correct according to the Rambam. But you can't say Kimli like the Rambam. Now if you're Ashkenazi, and even if you're a Sephardi, you can't, against Maran Bet Yosef. So the question became, Rav Yoshev is not hesitate to write, you know, proclamations. Why would we zoich not to get one over here? Baruch Hashem, we zoich. Here's my theory. And it's a quirk. You look up, as you see on Yamar Makomash, the last two in this segment, Kovitz Shuvah Chelik Beis in the Kuf Sama Gimel, and Chelik Aleph in the Kuf Sama Gimel. Same number, Kuf Sama Gimel. What's in the other one? He quotes Akasha. We'll get to with the last sheet about Ksubas. Every Ksuba, as we call it, Tosefes Ksuba. That you aside from what the Torah mandates, Halacha mandates, which is a fairly small amount of money. I think it's $500 and something. That's all it is. But the Tosefes Ksuba, which runs you into thousands and thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of dollars, you accept upon yourself. Ribbono shel Olam. Every case of Tosefes Ksuba should be an asmachta. If he divorced, he has to give him the money. He doesn't expect a divorce when under the chuppah, lovey-dovey. Should it always be an asmachta? That's the kasha. Rav Yosher quotes his kasha. And he gives the teretz. The teretz he gives is what I told you earlier. He says, we learned before, kama danos lebincha, kama danos lebincha, hein, hein, advarim, anikne bamira. You don't need a maisa kinyan. He said, asmachta only wants to undermine a maisa kinyan. You don't even need a Maisa Kinyan. You don't need a Maisa Kinyan. It's a smachta proof. In my humble opinion, that may be the reason Rav Yoshev never said anything against our prenup, because our prenup is good, even according to his smachta chash. Why? Because here it's done at right before the wedding, and it's something which is a lead up to the wedding. It's Rama Nikna Bamira. And even if those who say if it's too early, it doesn't apply. If you look at the Pesach Tshuva, another small source, they say, if you write a b'ksav, it's written down, and the shtar is still around when they get married, so in that case as well, it's considered to be right before the wedding, and therefore, there's no problem asmachta, according to Yosef's own thinking, in Kuf Sama Gimel and the other volume. This is some of the discussions that we had. There are many more items to talk about the prenuptial agreement. I'll just make a bekitzer remark. There were those who say it's not romantic to talk about this. To which I respond, the ksuba is also not romantic. The ksuba talks about only, the ksuba is talking about only about two things. Neither is romantic. Death or divorce. Neither is so romantic. But it's in Aramaic. No one pays any mind. But our Chazal were very concerned with aguna problems. And the whole ksuba, they should take kalabed of lotzia. She should become a grusha. If it's bad to become a grusha, kavachom, it's bad to become an aguna. It's worse than a grusha. It's stuck for life. So therefore, we think it's a very important item. It is enforceable in law. I'll just end with a couple of brief stories. Someone called it unconstitutional. And it was in Connecticut. They said it's very constitutional. It's just a matter of dollars and cents. Nothing to do with religion. And then, another story. This is I always have to tinker with the text. Originally, we just said what we said. And the case came before our Beis Din. Because you can't go out of a nickel without Beis Din. So what happened was, it was in Maryland. A guy signed the document, they signed it, and it was $100 a day. So they broke up. So the minute they broke up, he said, okay, I'll give you a get the first day. No recalcitrant, not even for one single day. Okay, but until they got to the Beis Din, it took 3 months until they came to Beis Din. He told them, I'll give the get today. She said no, she wants to go to secular court. She went to secular court, took 3 years, not a surprise. Good. They finished the civil divorce, that day gave her a get. Fine. It's a love note in the mail a week later. $100,000 of mizonos. 3 years. At $100,000 a day. It's $100,000. What? Came to the Beis Din. It was a split decision. One diet said nothing. Two diet said, $10,000. Why $10,000? For the 3 months till they came to the Beis Din. He said he's going to give the get right away. We don't know that. They both appealed. We have an appeal system in the Beis Din. And I was the appellate judge. I was the appellate judge, came to me, and I paskened zero, like the one dying against the two, because he said it in the first days, I didn't give it again. I wrote a whole thing about it. Actually, it's printed in the Beis Din has something which comes out. What's it called? I forgot what it's called. It's a BDF publication. It's printed in there. So she was so angry, she never even lost the 10,000. She went to second court in Maryland that the judge is irrational. So the judge wrote me a beautiful compliment. Not only is it not irrational, it's correct. The judge is masking to me. So we changed the text to add another line to that you cannot collect the money to give a demand on notice, certified mail. It's a work in progress. It's not necessarily a difference. We've made a number of tikkunim, and probably more tikkunim will be made. If you're not married yet, make sure to sign it. And if you're marrying somebody else off, try to encourage them to sign it as well. Okay, next week we'll talk about the Siddur Kiddushin prop. Hurry up, we'll catch you.